Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody, stop talking about movies. We're back.
No movie talk, huh, D?
Your Ben Jarofsky show. Right. Hour number two for Wednesday, January 15th. It's just moments away. But before we get into that, we need to thank the following unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. Unions like the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and of course, today's Ben Jarofsky show is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Hour number two, let's go. It is Wednesday, January 15th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In this hour of the program, we still got Monroe Anderson in studio. Our good friend Samina Mustafa is back, and we're going to be talking all things last night's debate. And we welcome Jackie Algy of SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
I'm so excited about having Samina Mustafa on the show. She's really one of the smart minds in Chicago on national politics. And people go, where's Letizia? Usually yeah. Letizia Wallace comes on. Where's Letizia? Letizia texted me. She couldn't make it. She had some previous engagement or something.
Miss you, Letizia.
Yeah, so next time Letizia will be here. Do you got an update before I pick Samina's brain?
Letizia, we miss you.
Yeah, we miss you.
All right, we're talking all things last night's debate. Who won? Who lost? Who's Tom Steyer? So many questions, and we're going to try and answer them. I don't know who won or who lost, but I tell you who I think maybe lost. CNN. Good Lord, CNN is getting trashed on Twitter.
CNN is trash has been trending all day.
CNN is trash has been trending all throughout Twitter. I'll read a few of these tweets that people have been putting here. This guy, Robert. Robert, we have no clue who Robert is. Robert put the hashtag CNN is trash and put, typically I wouldn't watch. Hashtag CNN is garbage or hashtag CNN is trash. Any of those hashtags. I've been watching CNN on a regular or weekly basis at least for a long time now, and I didn't watch the debate last night, but after reading and watching videos, it seems like CNN had a bad night. That was one of the nicer ones that's going around Twitter. So many people, CNN is trash. Ben, I'll throw the question to you. Is CNN trash?
Well, I was actually going to throw that question at Samina. How do I put this? These debates are all kind of the same in my mind, Samina. The way the questions are framed, where they come from, the role that the reporters or whatever they are, personalities play, is that of somebody from the right. So they're always questioning the Democrats as though, are you electable, is essentially what they're saying. Like, for instance, when they talk about foreign policy, how can you protect our people from ISIS? It's like a foreign policy question. I'm thinking, what control does any freaking president have over ISIS? You know what I'm saying? I just going on and on. I'm like, but that's how they frame it. They right. frame it like, we should be scared at the thought that you would replace our powerful leader in chief. What has he done to protect us against anybody? Anyway, right. That's just me riffing. What's your
No. I think, and as if you and I have talked, and you know, as we've recapped these debates now for what it seems like 10 years, there's a conceit, which is always, and there's that tension that the moderators always are always trying to create. So they either want, again, as you said, sort of use Republican talking points to frame everything, whether it's healthcare, military, anything, and then they want the candidates to go at each other. So they set up fights every single time. This is consistent, and they did it yesterday. And I was saying to you earlier on the phone that, you know, this debate, being a smaller field, and, you know, 2 hours, which is, I think, is more than enough time, there was an opportunity to make it really substantive. But they, you know, as I think I said, Wolf is going to blitz. And so that's what they did. They created this tension, this chaos. And really, and the one issue that they consistently argue in bad faith is healthcare. And there's never been a really good conversation or policy debate on healthcare, because it's always a sort of, how are you going to pay for it? And as people rightfully point out, whenever they ask about, you know, whether it's foreign policy, anything to do with defense spending, that question never comes up. The question never comes up. So I just think that these are, you know, there's a real problem. And this is the issue with, and you're going to probably see next to CNN's trash corporate media, hashtag, you know, corporate media is trash, mainstream media or something to that effect. I mean, they're all getting advertising dollars from those companies, the drug companies and the insurance companies and hospital systems. And let's be clear, defense contractors on all the Sunday talk shows. So,
Samina, it's the national equivalent of the local debate, which I write about all the time, and that goes like this. When the teachers union goes on strike asking for more resources to be dedicated to nurses and social workers, everyone in Chicago turns into a CPA. The powers that be in Chicago are suddenly CPAs as they scrutinize the budget. How many nickels and dimes will nurses cost for some poor black kid in a school? Right. But when Amazon wants to come to town with its big paw out for a handout to build some office building in the North Loop, money is no limit.
Right.
You know, we still don't even know the details of the contract that Mayor Rahm and Governor Rauner offered to Amazon. It's the same thing. When Bernie or Elizabeth Warren kind of pulled away from the debate, that's something we should talk about. It's almost like she feels she's been intimidated on this issue. Mm-hmm. But when Elizabeth Warren or Bernie in the past have presented their neat position on health care for all, immediately, how are you going to pay for it? And Biden, Klobuchar, and Buttigieg, they all come at him on that issue.
Right. And I think this is where I think Bernie and Warren could have done a better job, is really push back on. And I think Bernie might have said it at some point, and the numbers, you know, change, you know, have sort of, there's not anywhere between 30 and 45,000 people die a year because they don't have health insurance. And that's not reflecting even, you know, the people who are underinsured and maybe deferring health care or drugs. And so, you know, it's with their sort of false narrative, you can push back and say, well, how many deaths do you want to be responsible for? I mean, there's a way to do it and push back hard. And they kind of never go there. But I think, again, the conceit of these debates is always, you know, the progressives versus the centrists. And somehow Biden always, he always is sort of unfocused and says things that sound bizarre, and nobody follows up. And I also noticed that he didn't get cut off. He also did something he did actually in the very first debate, which is he cut himself off.
Yeah.
And I think that's because he frankly doesn't have a lot to say.
Well, it came out a week or two ago that he's a stutterer. And so he starts things and he has to compose himself. This is why he speaks so slowly and what have you, because otherwise he'd be talking like this, and he doesn't want to do that, so he's doing that. I think, Bernie did.
But that doesn't affect how substantive his response can be.
Yeah, I know, but there was not a lot of substance going on last night at all. And it really frustrated me, because rather than argue over how much health care is going to cost or how many people it's going to deal with, because there's a dime's worth of difference between the candidates that were up there on that stage overall. Every last one of them should have bridged from whatever the question was to Trump. And they should have spent that time attacking Trump and whatever the question was, saying, but this is how Trump has done it, and this is the damage is done, or this is the campaign promise he did not make. They all should have been doing that instead of trying to distinguish who was half an inch taller than who in the crowd.
I think they should. Some candidates did that, but again, the setups from the moderators were very much about Democrats fighting Democrats, because that's what they want.
But see, a good candidate, somebody
right.
worthy of leading right. our country, would bridge from that.
Absolutely,
because you could ask me, or did you quit beating your wife last night or something? You know. And my answer was never did. However, I think that women should have better centers for those who are beaten by their husbands. I mean,
there's a pivot.
That.
Yeah, you get coached
from that. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
You get coached,
and they should have done that. Every last one of them. I mean, first of all, I don't think Iowa's going to count that much. In terms of who becomes president or who doesn't, we're going to now, I think it's all shifting to Super Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And when Bloomberg comes in with all his money, and I think we got a different dynamic going on this year. We'll see.
So, I mean, before I let this point drop, if we move on to other things, do you think that CNN is any worse than any of the other networks that have hosted debates or any of the other news operations? I mean, everybody's trashing CNN today, and I'm just wondering, in your opinion, thanks to me, you've dutifully watched every single debate, and I thank you for that. But
yeah.
Do you think CNN's any worse?
So I will say I was shocked at how bad the PBS NewsHour was in between breaks, how terrible their sort of commentary was. I didn't think anyone could be worse than MSNBC or CNN, and they proved me wrong. So I thought it was quite bad. One other thing I want to say more globally, kind of stepping back from the CNN and the sort of the cage match that CNN set up, is that let's remember there was not a single candidate of color on this stage. They did not, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't recall a substantive conversation on immigration,
None. On
reproductive choice. I mean, was there something on criminal justice? I mean, did I miss that one?
No, right. No, you're right. But the thing that amazes me most is that the story about Parnas and Giuliani and the memos and emails that they have that broke last night was not questioned. It was not discussed at all.
So here's my thinking about all this, and get your reaction. The moderators for every single network, that's why I say CNN is no better or worse than them, have all worked from the assumption that every Democrat agrees with what Samina's going to say about women's choice, let's say, okay? But the election will turn on whether Trump voters in Michigan will flip to a Democrat. So they don't even bring up abortion. It's like the issue doesn't exist, because that's not going to be the issue, in their humble opinion, that will get a Trump voter to flip. Confront the concerns that they think a Trump voter would have over foreign policy. Will we be safer?
Yes. That's the fallacy, because the Trump voters are not going to flip.
No, exactly.
They're not going to flip. So what the Democrats need to be doing is going out and talking to black people in particular, other minorities, encouraging more of them to show up. because Trump wouldn't be president today if African Americans in Detroit, in Philadelphia, and in Milwaukee showed up in the numbers that they showed up for Obama. That is, he wouldn't have won those electoral college votes, and so Hillary would have been president. They need to bring out their people that are there, that are with them, that support them, instead of chasing the ever elusive white man.
Well, the closest thing we got to this issue last night was when, I can't remember which moderator, which questioner, asked Mayor Pete to address the fact that he has such small support among black voters.
Right.
And that was it. That's the closest they got to dealing with this.
Yeah, and to dovetail what Monroe was saying, yes, absolutely, talking to the base, bringing up these issues reminds voters who are the natural Democratic base that won these candidates care about it. And if there is any nuance or difference amongst those candidates, where it is, if it's anywhere. So it really is reminding, yes, we care about this, and here's what we're going to do about it. Because we're in 2020. We've had 7 years post Shelby versus Holder. 34 states have voter ID laws. 34 states.
Talk about Shelby versus Holder. Just help.
So that's the Supreme Court case where basically, I think it was Justice John Roberts who basically destroyed the voting rights protection that we had. So it was like, you know, I'm not an attorney, but it basically took away the federal oversight and
from the discriminatory states.
Yeah, so if you have a history of discriminating based on race, then you will be, the Justice Department will actually be over your shoulder, and you can't just change the laws willy-nilly.
Yeah. Well, that treat you like a black woman.
See,
and that opened the floodgates.
And
Wisconsin, Wisconsin's a perfect example of that.
Yeah,
think about
it.
They just, there was a court decision that just came out in the last, 24 to 48 hours that actually stopped that voter purge in Wisconsin. Yeah. And so it looks like it's not going to go through in this cycle. But that doesn't mean there aren't barriers to voting in Wisconsin.
It won't. Right. Wait, time out. I've not read the details.
The purge, that it's about 200,000 voters.
200,000 voters kicked off the rolls.
Yeah. It's kicked off the rolls. So, again, going to your point, you know, that yes, you have to, I agree with Monroe, you have to animate your base instead of trying to flip those five, you know, Trump, Obama, Trump voters, this mythological unicorn that they keep going after.
Right.
And so there's that. And so that's why you cover those things. But again, you know, reporters and the moderators of these debates like to create tension, and that is what they're there for. But again, that's not what animates the base. Now, at some point, I think there were a couple of different candidates that did do what Monroe said, that they pivoted, or they tried to say, you know, these are the things that I'm hearing. You know, like Amy Klobuchar always has kind of a hokey little anecdote that she likes to throw in. But I mean, like, sometimes we just have to remind people, like, yes, you've actually spent some time in Iowa or talked to a voter or two. So, I mean, not everybody does it as elegantly as some others, but that's what you have to remind people. Yes, we hear you. We're doing the work. We're spending the time. And so, conversations about foreign policy tend to be really just gotcha moments, like you said this, and they're gonna be played over and over again in either a Trump commercial, a GOP super PAC commercial. I mean, and again, it is a false narrative. Trump has no idea what he's doing on foreign policy.
Zero.
He has no idea what he is doing. The State Department is gutted. I mean, you have, and even DOD doesn't even seem to want to, like, the jingoists are like, hold up, which is kind of insane. But if you looked at when, all these shenanigans, I think, like, defense stocks went through the roof, and they're having a field day. You've got record military budgets. This is not an anti-war president, okay? So, like, that whole Maureen Dowd, Donald the Dove, Hillary the Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Hillary is hawkish, Donald is not a dove. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
Like, but guess what? Going to war is bipartisan. You know, expanding military budgets is bipartisan. And I can't remember which of the moderators asked it, but they asked about asked Biden about the fact that they didn't go to Congress when they did actions, and then Biden used the authorization to use military force, which famously Barbara Lee was the sole vote against that, that Bernie Sanders keeps reminding us, and I think he's trying to kiss up to her to get that endorsement. But I mean, like, let's be clear that it is bipartisan obsession with going to war.
And Biden's hands are not bloodless either.
No, they're not.
Well, Bernie voted, he acknowledged last night that he voted for authorization for the invasion of Afghanistan.
Right.
And then he distinguished that vote from his vote against the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
A more compelling argument could be made for the invasion of Afghanistan. Yeah. I remember the debate, and Barbara Lee was the only one who stood up and voted no.
Right.
And because she anticipated how it would be used.
Right.
Absolutely. And people forget the fervor in this country in the aftermath of 9/11, the war fervor in this country, and we're still not completely out of it. Here we are 20 years later or so.
Well, I think we're pretty much out of it. I mean, for one thing, one of the next victims in Afghanistan, killed of our people, soldiers in Afghanistan, won't have been born when that war started.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, okay, but what does that say we're not out of it? Because the question last night at the foreign policy question, which I still can't get over, is, you know, if you say you want to leave Iraq, I can't remember which person asked it. You say you want to leave Iraq. If we leave Iraq, ISIS will come back. So what do you say to people who are worried about ISIS coming back? I'm like,
yeah, no.
So we're still dealing with this issue left over from Bush. Bush raised that issue back in 2002 or three. Go ahead.
Right. And I think there's this is without really, I'm not going to precisely answer your question, but I'm going to ask us to take a step back. What people don't know enough because of debates like this where things are framed with little to no history and no context. People don't understand the history of the U.S. in the Middle East and containment and how much of these actions in the Middle East in particular have been proxy wars and how the U.S. and Saudi Arabia have...
And about oil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And about oil. But it's... The fact that we have Saudi Arabia as an ally, versus Iran, like it just, I think people don't quite fully understand it. So to present it in a debate like this without a lot of context, and again, just to all it's really trying to do is to say, I can be as tough on the Middle East, I can be tough on crime, essentially, as a global cop. That's exactly what it is. That's all it is I can be tough like the GOP. For some reason, the GOP has now sort of owned the military. I was actually asking a veteran about this a couple of years ago, and it's this obsession that the Democrats have. It's why they go nuts for anyone who's running who's a veteran, because they want to be able to show we're good on defense, we're good on national security. But all that they have proven is that they make the same mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Right. See, and the problem is they can't tell the truth.
Right.
In that,
who can't tell the truth?
Yeah, our politicians, our candidates.
No.
You know, because
yeah, I know.
Iran,
you're right.
Iran is at war with us because of what we did back in the 50s.
Right.
When we deposed a democratically elected leader and installed the Shah of Iran, who set up a police state and was very oppressive, but did what we wanted him to do, what the U.S., the oil companies wanted him to do. And it was not until 79 when they had their revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still, I mean, they're fighting a war with us. It's a proxy war mainly, and it's not a hot war, not a cold war, something in between. But we're, you know, but they are trying to get rid of us because we're impacting the way they want to run their country.
That is Monroe Anderson, Samina Mustafa in the studio as well. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about Handshake Gate. We'll be right back.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffmanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent, and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you, people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
He loves that piano player. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
All right, Samina, before we address the issue of Handshake Gate, I was negligent. I did not allow you to tell people about your great podcast. Talk about it.
Thanks. It's called Hand with the Mic, just debuted last month. My most recent guest that I interviewed is a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Dr. Paru Shah, and we're talking about women of color running for office. Oh. So timely, the fact that we had not a single one on stage last night. But yeah, which is to me a real, again, going back to the conversation about support amongst the Democratic base and Pete manufacturing black voters' support. Yeah. He's still at 0%. I mean, here's what's actually even more troubling to me is people knowing that and still having so much enthusiasm for him. And, like, I don't know, like, I'm not close friends with these people, but I know people who are on Team Pete. Like, I know of them. And my sense is just like, you must really resent. You know, the base of the Democratic Party, even though you're a Democrat, because this is the core of this party. And I think you're kind of oblivious if you don't recognize that.
Yeah. One thing I've known for a long time, having moved to Chicago in 1981, it's as though there's a divide. Black people are on this side, white people are on that side. And that's the way it is. Monroe knows what I'm talking about. It's just the way it is. So Mayor Pete's got his supporters, and they don't understand it. Like when Henry Davis comes on the show and talks about the utter lack of support that Mayor Pete had in South Bend. They just don't know. What are you talking about, man? I mean, we've been living this our whole life, Monroe.
Yeah, you know, but the thing with no black candidates left except for Duvall.
Duvall. I forget.
Yeah. On stage. Yeah, there's nobody on stage, though.
Exactly. Nobody on stage. But Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post made an interesting observation, I think. And he said that the reason Kamala and Corey are gone is because black voters, who are the most pragmatic voters in this country, decided that we need an old white man to beat an old white man. That's the way they want to get rid of Trump, and that they think that the best way to get rid of Trump is to have another old white man, i.e. Biden, to do it.
All right, I'm just saying, I don't want to go down this path, but I just have to give a shout out to our good friend Sergio Mims. Cape Heart's heading in Sergio country. Sergio said it on this show about 3 weeks ago that black voters came to the conclusion they really gain a whole heck of a lot from Barack Obama, so that's why they're not going for another black candidate. Remember,
no,
Sergio
right,
said
exactly.
That?
Exactly.
Trash, Sergio. Threw Sergio under the bus.
That's some of Sergio's cockeyed thinking. They love Obama.
Okay, well, they do. Obama. Okay, all right. Let's just put that one aside. But when you, I heard you say that, I had to give some love to Sergio. All right.
I love Sergio.
I love Sergio too. Yeah. All right, Samina, got to ask you about Handshake Gate. We've been, I talked about it at the start of the show, and that, of course, has to do with the tussle, I guess, between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. My beloved Democrats love to fight each other more than they love to fight Republicans. I guess it's easier to beat a Democrat than to beat a Republican, so they always take the easy way out. But well, you know how it went down. Elizabeth Warren has accused Bernie Sanders of saying in a private conversation that a woman cannot be elected president. Bernie says he didn't say it. Elizabeth Warren says he did say it. You're right. The questioner asked the point. That question directly at last night's debate, and after the debate, when Bernie went to shake hands with Elizabeth Warren, she did not extend her hand to shake her hand. So now you talk about Twitter. Even I know that Twitter's afire with Handshake Gate. So your thoughts.
Yeah, so it's interesting because yesterday there was also something, I believe it was in The Intercept, where a bunch of progressives who are supporting either Sanders or Warren basically said, we got to come together and we can't take the bait. And what they were basically saying is this is actually the time where if there's oppo or if there's some kind of kerfuffle to be had, to happen amongst progressives to split that vote, it's going to happen now. And so we can't go down that path. So my feeling is that this is another case of trying to split progressives, and someone's found an issue, whether it was the Warren camp or the Sanders camp, whoever leaked it, because within 48 hours before that, there was a memo that was came from a campaign a field person on how to do talking points on the if someone supported one of Sanders' opponents. So that was a huge kerfuffle, and then you had this story from Warren, and CNN was reporting on it. Which, again, I'm just a little suspicious of both of those stories, frankly, because I look at them and I think, okay, ooh, Iowa's coming up. This is, I still think Iowa's going to be significant because it's going to propel whoever wins it to have some momentum. They're going to be the winner of the Iowa caucus. I mean, it's going to get, they're going to get pressed for it. So
maybe two, the way they now have it set up with a 15%. You come up
it's
with
possible.
Two
yeah, you're right. It's yeah. possible. But I'm saying like, but that's the thing is you can't dismiss that this only benefits someone like Biden. And sitting in the wings, you know, sort of like Burns from The Simpsons, is Donald John Trump is saying, you know, he's not even that smart, but he this is. I mean, I hate to be. I know. He's like this benefits him because if progressives are split, and you have someone like Biden who, frankly, didn't.
So you don't buy into the fight at all. You don't. You're not.
I find it really. Because I see these hashtags erupt, I observe Twitter. I don't really participate on Twitter a lot, and so and to me, social media is one of those places. And someone said this actually, an organizer said this. Said, go. She and this is a young black organizer in Chicago. She said, go to the hood. They have no idea what's happening. If you told them what was happening between Sanders and Warren, they would think you were talking about Game of Thrones. And so it doesn't mean anything to people outside the super engaged, super obsessed political nerds and the social media folks. And so talk to the base. What do they care about? Is any of this even bubble up?
Yeah.
And so that is where I think some folks, actually both in the Sanders and Warren camps, are saying, you know what? We just have to keep our heads down and keep talking to our supporters. And keep moving forward.
Yeah,
but there are some people who, frankly, will lose their minds regardless of what comes up.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what it is, and they will lose their minds.
Yeah.
It's predictable. Like a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, somebody was posting about, you know, canvassing. I'm not going to say the name of the organization, canvassing in Chicago. And they posted a couple of pictures, and someone pointed out, you know, and they're left-leaning, and someone pointed out, wow, that's a really interesting picture for Chicago, and point out, like, isn't Chicago like 30% black? And then all these people are like, are you doing race science? Or like, and this, again, if people will lose their minds if you sort of poke at them, and someone's poking at you. But you have, all you can control is how you respond. Yeah.
That's a valid point. Monroe, before we close this segment and bring Jackie Algie on, who is our next guest, is in the studio, did you have any strong reaction to Handshake Gate?
It's just, ooh, and that was it. I mean, it didn't matter to me. She's a little bit upset with him, so she didn't want to shake his hand. He probably said it. I think he's lying. Because he's an almost 80-year-old white man, so he's got that whole male privilege thing, you know. So he probably said it. And
now she's mad because she knows he said it,
right? Exactly.
It's like he's saying she's a liar, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't say it. He was careful enough not to quite say it, but basically that's what he said, and. No big deal.
Yeah, I think Samin is absolutely right when most people don't even know what's going on. But all right, we got Jackie Algie on. We're going to bring her on. Monroe, thank you very much. Great to see you back.
One more time, tell people about that podcast, Samina.
Well, I think Samina's going to stick around.
I'm going to stick around for a little bit. You're booting me out.
Yeah, she'll be here. But tell them about the podcast anyway.
Hand her the mic on Facebook, at Hand Her Mic on Twitter, and on iTunes and the Dumbcast Network.
All right, very good. We'll be right back with Jackie Algie.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Jackie Algie has joined us. Jackie Algie has joined us from SEIU Healthcare. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you, Ben.
And I know that's you're good. Here to talk about the Women's March, which is this Saturday.
It is.
Correct? But before we talk about that, let's pick your brain on last night's debates. And we were talking about Handshake Gate. Democrats love to fight each other, Jackie. This is my opinion, because it's easier to fight Democrats than it is to beat Republicans. So Democrats look for the easy way out. Always, my beloved Democratic Party is always chicken to take on Republicans, but they love to fight each other. This is me speaking. What's your thoughts about the whole thing?
Well, a couple of things that I'm thinking about it. Let me first, full disclosure, I didn't see the debate because I was at another event, but, you know, to my sister's point earlier, in our communities, people are not looking at that. They don't know about it. I don't know that they would particularly care about it, even if they did know, because that's not going to fix things for them. Them shaking hands is not going to fix one thing for them. And we'll talk later about some of those things. But and the reason that we're marching on Saturday.
All right.
It's not going to fix anything. But what I will say, and just want to share with you, I was listening to 1390 earlier, which I do often.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an advertisement that was paid by Donald J. Trump, mm-hmm. Inc. Let me tell you something. I listen to 1390 almost every day. That just came on there today. I thought I was hearing things. I thought, oh, this has got to be a joke. The testimonial that they professed, or what they were professing, he stood for, he's a Christian man, and he does this. Keep in mind the audience. So he's a Christian man. I've never heard anything about it. I think he went to church maybe once since he's been in office.
He went to church the day he was sworn in.
Yeah.
I'm not certain that he's been to church since. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, and that's his thing. Yeah, but to portray him as this Christian man, that's a whole different thing. And add to the audience that they were doing
that
it
is
too.
Correct.
So, that's what I'd be more concerned about.
In other words, what you're saying is that as we speak, as Democrats fight with each other, as Elizabeth Warren refuses to shake Bernie's hand, as Bernie denies something like Monroe said, he probably said.
Yeah, I'm thinking that he might have.
He might have said it, but who knows the context, whatever. Right. As this is happening, Donald John Trump is buying up time on black radio stations to get his message out to black people in the hopes what is he looking to get?
Well, I think so. If we go back to this, you know, not shaking hands stuff and this infighting, he can say, well, they're kind of distracted. You know, he's a master at distraction. So they're distracted by, if they are distracted by the handshake or the non-handshake, let me just squeeze in there and get some attention that says, hey, they're fighting over this. I'm trying to make things better for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we discussed this with Monroe. Get your reaction to this. Every time, I know you know Monroe Anderson, every time Monroe does battle with Republicans, and he does it all the time, he's a big proponent, Monroe is, of impeachment. Mm-hmm. And every time he does battle with Republicans, Republicans come right back. This is what they say, Samina and Jackie. They come back and they say, black employment is up under Donald John Trump, as though there's something proactive that Donald Trump is doing, using his powers in the presidency to help black people.
Yeah.
Like he woke up that morning, Jackie, and said, you know what, I really want to help some black guy get a job. All right. What is your response when you hear that argument, that counter argument that Monroe gets all the time, that Donald Trump has been really good to black people?
Huh. Yeah. Okay. So what we know is, first of all, he hasn't been good to black people at all. The racist remarks and comments that he's been making since the beginning and made, quite frankly, before he ever thought about running for office, just is a testament as to who he is and what he stands for. He has not done one thing, in my opinion, for us, except wake us up, hopefully, to know that he's got to go. And that's, again, another reason that we're marching on Saturday, so we can help get out the vote and get him out.
All right, let's talk about the women's marches coming up this Saturday.
Okay.
Let's transition right here. Go.
That's good. And so we're doing something different this time than we've done in the past marches. Mm-hmm. We're not having a program. We're marching, and we're marching to put people in step with a 2020 vision of what they want this city, this state, and this country to look like post-November.
So, in other words, I can remember speakers, you're not going to convert.
We don't have any speakers. What we're going to do is we are gathering. The gates open at 9, and we have.
Where will this be? Where the gates literally open?
I'm sorry. So the gates will open at Ida B. Wells and Columbus Drive at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And people will gather as they have in the past, hopefully thousands of them, and then proceed up to where we normally congregate and have a stage, which is at the corner of Columbus Drive and Jackson Boulevard. And at that point, we'll be getting people in line to step off at 11. That's our goal, to step off at 11. In the past, we've always had a section in front of the stage specifically for people with disability. Mm-hmm. Since we're not having a program, they are going to be our lead marshals, if you would, for the march, along with our elected officials, which Women's March Chicago really helps to take credit for getting so many of these women, especially women of color, in office in these last couple of years. And so they're going to lead. We've got Mayor Lightfoot. We've got President Preckwinkle. We've got Kim Fox. We've got Lieutenant Governor Stratton Echols. We've got Senator Lightfoot. We've got who else? Congressman Schakowsky, our one of our super friends and sheroes, I should say. We've got Congresswoman Kelly. We've got, So all the more that I can think of to name.
And and so then the march will continue, and then it'll disperse. So no,
it will disperse. But what is going to be really unique about this march mm-hmm. is we're going to have a gallery of issues. So there are approximately five blocks between that starting point and the Federal Plaza. Each block will address an issue, starting with 2020 census, which we know if we don't get the census done, man, I'm telling you, millions of dollars we've lost as a result of not having an accurate count in 2010. We aim to change that this time around. And then the next block will be gun violence prevention. We've got Kids Off the Block and some other, the Brady campaign, just some other amazing people that are doing work. And each block will have people that are doing this work every day to make a change. Then the following block will be climate justice. And we know that that's really important. We got some young people coming out that's going to be, that are doing work on climate mm-hmm. that are really amazing. And their voices will be heard, okay? And their presence seen. And then we're going to do health care. And our other guests will talk more about that. And then finally, getting out the vote.
And this will be going on not just Chicago, but there'll be marches throughout the country.
There are marches throughout the country, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Samina, does this excite you? Do you think this could be a potential turning point of sorts of getting Democrats to focus?
Yeah, I mean, the census alone, think about it. We're not only dollars, but we're going to lose probably a seat, a congressional
seat
in this next cycle.
That's
this is one of those things where it's incredibly important. One of the groups that I'm on the board of, Asian Americans Advancing Justice, is part of a lot of these democracy reform organizations and has also gotten funding for this purpose. And when you've got folks, especially folks who are, are not, English is not their native language, making sure there are people to reach out to those folks, especially in light of the immigration enforcement environment we have. Mm-hmm. This is like a scary time for folks. That's why that census question, that citizenship question on the census was such a big deal. So this is really critical stuff.
Well, the point that Jackie didn't hear, Samina made this pretty forcefully when we started our conversation about last night's debate. Mm-hmm. Absent from the debate really last night were a discussion of issues that would rile up Democrats, fire up Democrats. Mm-hmm. The whole focus of the debate, Samina, I'm stealing Samina's point, but the whole focus of the debate was really like challenging Democrats with talking points from the Republicans. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? Well, what's your response to, XYZ, and how this issue may not win over a Republican swing voters or swing voters who may go Democrat in Michigan or Wisconsin. And Samina's point was there are issues that the Democrats could advocate and champion that would get Democratic voters to the polls. It seems like Democrats, they run away from their issues, Jackie, and they always are trying to how can I win over this Republican as opposed to championing something that would get a Democrat to come to the poll? What's your response to that?
My response is they definitely need to talk real issue, real talk. That's what that's what people want to hear, need to hear, and that's what's going to get people to the polls. All of this other stuff, and again, those are just five issues, but there are so many more that we need to address. Immigration, we can talk about that forever and how it impacts not just our Latino brothers and sisters, but brothers and sisters from all the diaspora who are not being considered as being threatened, but they are. And so we need to be having those real talk conversations so that people will, first of all, get energized and interested. Because right now, I'm hearing people, it's so apathetic out there, I can't tell you, Ben. People are like, oh, yeah, what am I? We're used to the, why am I going to vote? It's not going to, my vote's not going to make a difference. It's even beyond that now. It's like, why am I vote, period. I mean, and this is from people who normally vote. But they don't feel the earth. It's people I'm hearing say, I don't have a clue as to who I want to vote for. By now, someone should have surfaced for them. Mm. And I'm a proponent of issues and issue-based campaigns. And I think that if people really would focus on some, I'm not saying that they have to do the five we're doing on Saturday, but they definitely should look at those five and others that would help to mobilize people.
All right, before we take a break and bring on our mystery guest, who's sitting in the wings, we let Samina go. I'm going to put Samina on the spot a little bit. I do my top five. I rank them where I'm at, and I'm been my number one, two have been pretty steady since the start of the campaign. Just your general thoughts. Who are the five candidates that you, or you cannot even get five?
I can't get to five. So you can just cut the music, Dennis, because there's not going to be a countdown.
Oh, my God. Yeah, can you get to three?
Wow. Okay, I can get to three.
All right,
I can
here
get
we
to
go.
Three. Okay, yeah, and they're in. They are not in order.
Okay. Okay. Just naming three.
Just naming three. So Sanders, Warren, and Steyer.
Steyer. Mm. Whoa. Why Steyer?
If you're talking about who was on stage yesterday.
Yes.
Okay, so like that's where I'm sticking to the people who are on stage. So Steyer is a billionaire. It's a problem. Like he is spending he's spent $100 million so far. But when he, you know, every now and again he says something that makes sense. Like, go ahead, tax me. Like, yeah. I'm like, I agree with Tom Steyer on that.
It's a valid point.
So he does, and the fact that he knows that, you know, campaign finance reform is an issue, climate is an issue. Where he loses me absolutely is the fact that one, he's a billionaire, he's trying to buy the election, and two, the fact that he is not a supporter of Medicare for All, which is one of my big issues. Yeah. So, but if you're forcing me to come up with a couple of names, right. I mean, think about it, there's only six people on stage. Yeah. I'm definitely not on Team Joe or Pete or Amy. So that's those folks are out. I think of those three, actually, I feel like Pete is probably the least. Would rank at the very bottom.
All right. Now, years ago, people may not know this. Samina was a stand-up comic. So another stand-up comic made the news yesterday. Dave Chappelle endorsed Yang. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. So did that motivate you in any way? No.
So I know there's members of the Yang gang. They might be in this room, actually. but So I feel like it's exciting that someone who is Asian American has gotten this far and is still in the race and is getting support, but I don't agree with him policy-wise. Mm-hmm. I find him problematic on a couple of different areas, one of which is the fact that he engages in tropes about Asian Americans and our model minority standards or whatever. I feel like it's something he should really be educated on more, and he's not. Dave Chappelle is a classic example of somebody, and again, this comes from my comedy world, where, and I think Sinbad actually was on a podcast. This is a deep cut. He was on a podcast with Pete Holmes, who's also a comic, and he basically said, like, there's this evolution that happens with comics where, like, they kind of have a certain kind of politics when they're open micers and they're sort of grinding and trying to become famous, and then they sort of lose that whole perspective once they... get Dave Chappelle money. Mm-hmm. And so Dave Chappelle is not the same Dave Chappelle that walked away from everything.
Can I just say something in defense of Dave Chappelle?
Oh.
I know you wanted to talk about Tulsi for a moment. I'll let you get the Tulsi remark in. But Dennis and I the other day were listening to a Dave Chappelle routine. I admit, I'm a big fan of Dave Chappelle. From 2004, was it? And it was about Michael Jackson. Mm. And I was listening to that, and I just saw his last two Netflix shows. Samina, I'm telling you, Dave Chappelle of 2004 is pretty much Dave Chappelle of 2020 or 19. The world has changed. Mm. David Chappelle is David Chappelle.
You know what? He was hosting Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. He was the first host immediately following the 2016 election.
That is correct.
And I don't know if you remember his monologue.
I do remember his monologue.
At the very end, he says, I'm going to give Donald Trump a chance, but I want him to give us a chance, too. And I was like, okay, Dave, with your millions.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
I am not... and I know there's another really famous comic and a musician. Is it Donald Glover? Am I thinking? Am I? I'm looking at the millennial, Childish Gambino.
Childish Gambino, like, started, yes.
He endorsed him too. So I'm just like,
Who did Donald Glover?
Yeah, he endorsed really? Yang.
He did.
I thought she was saying Trump.
Donald Trump. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, what?
He endorsed Andrew Yang. So no, I mean, like, look, that's a whole episode we can talk about.
Yeah, we should have you come on talk about comedy.
Women in comedy, men, like, don't even get me started. I have experienced all of it. I've literally been at an open mic where somebody makes a rape joke and thinks it's hilarious, and other guys don't say anything, and me, has to be the one to say, you're not coming back to this open mic. So, I mean, like, it's a subculture that most people aren't exposed to. So that's a separate conversation. Can we change subjects now?
Go ahead. We did the thing. Now we did my thing. Now do your thing.
So, you know, every time we come in here, I love to talk about Tulsi Gabbard. This is somewhat related to her. So for those folks who pay attention to what's happening outside of Chicago and America, we have a fascist in India. We have the Donald Trump of India, Narendra Modi. And what he's doing is a couple of things that are actually really similar to what Trump has done. He's essentially actually passed a law with the assistance of the parliament that's controlled by his party, the BJP, essentially a Muslim ban. It's called the Citizenship Amendment Act. He's also talking about a registry that would essentially be like a Muslim registry. There's been essentially mob violence and violence against protesters because people are protesting the Citizenship Amendment Act, called the CAA for short. And so, but for years, ever since Modi got into power, Muslims and people of lower caste, they're called Dalits, have been attacked by mobs. Wow. They've been lynched. I mean, someone who's suspected of having beef or some rumors created about them, not unlike what happened in this country not too long ago, they're being snatched up and killed by mobs. So this violence has been going on for a long time. That is one of the reasons why so many folks had an issue with Tulsi Gabbard, because she was fundraising from his supporters here in the U.S. Mm. There is a complete network of folks that have supported candidates like Tulsi Gabbard. The other candidate they support a lot is our Schaumburg's very own Raja Krishnamurthy. So on Sunday, we are going to be doing a protest on Devon Avenue to call attention to that and call out him and the supporters, the U.S.-based supporters of this violence. And you have literally had hundreds of millions of people protesting in India over the last couple of weeks. I think the average American has no idea. 250 million people in the streets. That's almost the entire population of the U.S., on the streets in India, and nobody knows about it. So that's my little...
Okay, and what time?
So that's going to be noon on Devon. There's a Facebook invite for it. We're being a little hush-hush on the information because we're anticipating counter-protesters.
I see.
There was an event last year where actually protesters were attacked physically, and they were called dirty Muslims. So, and Raja Krishnamurthy went to that event. It was in Lombard, Illinois, called the World Hindu Congress, and he went to this event and has yet to apologize for essentially what were hate crimes. Mm. So this is like real, you know, all jokes aside,
this is real stuff. Maybe we should bring Raja on sometime with you and have a real discussion about this.
We're going to, I've written an op-ed with a veteran and a Oak Park Village trustee, Arthi Walker-Pethicola, that's going to come out in Common Dreams in the next day or so, talking exactly about this, how these folks have actually infiltrated U.S. politics, and they're actually very Trump-leaning, and they're starting to get the vote out for Trump. So if you have areas like New Jersey, any places where there's a large Indian diaspora, they're trying to get the vote out for Trump. So, like, it will affect our politics.
All right, very good. Samina, thank you. You're going to have a busy weekend between the Women's March and that. You're going to be out in the streets. Samina Mustafa, she comes on our show regularly. She is the host of her own podcast, Hand Her the Mic. Thank you so much. We're going to take a real brief break. Come right back with our mystery guest. Jackie's going to introduce our mystery guest when we return.
And this budget makes key reforms to Chicago's tax increment finance program, or what many people refer to as TIF. This year's additional surplus to the city is $31.4 million. But more than that, My team is undertaking a detailed review to reform TIF and align it more closely with our economic development needs and our values, accountability, and transparency. The days of the TIF slush fund are over.
Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show. Mr. Jarofsky, take us home.
All right, we're almost done with today's show. It's been a great show. Monroe Anderson, Samina Mustafa, Jackie Alge still in the studio from SEIU Healthcare. Jackie, you have a mystery guest that you want to introduce. She's been very patient sitting through our discussion. She's got something to say, so why don't you introduce our mystery guest?
I am really honored and privileged to introduce Ikea Johnson. She is a leader. She works at Roseland Hospital, but she's not only a leader as far as the union is concerned, but she's a leader at that hospital and the incredible work that she does every day in the hats, the many hats she wears. No one can tell her story any better than IKEA.
All right, IKEA, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
And so what's your job at Roseland?
Well, I'm the lead medical assistant in the emergency room. I do pretty much almost everything.
So you're the person in the emergency room, like someone comes in, and are you the first person that meets the patient when they come in?
Yes. Usually I do a lot of hands-on care, so when a patient comes in, I'm usually the person that puts them on a heart monitor. I draw their blood. I do AccuChecks. If the patient needs to be cleaned, I will clean the patient. I also part-time secretary. I be a phlebotomist. I watch psych patients occasionally. I wear a few hats there.
And so is there a specific training that you have to go through, or is it just... to handle all these different kind of situations, all these different kind of ailments and patients, or is it just learning on the job?
Well, it's mostly learning on the job. I did go to school. I do have an associate's and medical assistant, but the work that I do is nothing like school at all.
Talk about that. What's the difference, like the real job as opposed to what they teach you in school?
So usually a medical assistant will work in a doctor's office and will do more clerk work, like answer the phones, make appointments, do injections like birth control, and do urine analysis and stuff there. I do way more than I usually would in a smaller setting. We have 19 beds, so on a daily, and that's not even including if a hospital going bypass or with Metro South closing, the high patient volume that we have now. We have patients in the hallways on beds. We have ambulances standing in line just to try to get a room. It's really different.
In other words, you're telling me there's a shortage of beds and healthcare south of the Loop in the city of Chicago?
Definitely. Definitely. And we're really understaffed, so it's a challenge every day going into work, having maybe two or three nurses. I will be there and maybe another medical assistant, and if we have psych patients, that medical assistant, I have to watch the psych patients, so now there's no one to help the nurses with the patients on the floor but me, and I still have to focus on trying to do orders and help the doctor, and it's pretty exhausting some days.
So, Jackie, how does this connect to some of the issues that are being raised at the Women's March?
So, again, one of the blocks that the issues will cover is healthcare. And what we know from her story, as well as countless numbers of stories of members and workers who work in hospitals, especially in the Black and Brown communities, the South and West sides, that are short-staffed, they certainly don't get paid enough. And this, you know, obviously impacts the quality of service that patients are getting, right? And so on Saturday, at that block, the healthcare block, we want to raise the fact that healthcare should not be a disparity anywhere in this city, that it should be equal, that we should not have to have people having more longevity of life because they have quality health care and access to it on the north side and other parts of the city, and don't have it in the on the south side and the west side. Not to mention that so many of those workers are black and brown and women. Majority of them are women who they work two and three jobs. They work or they work extended hours because of the short staffing in their hospital settings. And they don't make enough money to take care of themselves and their families in a lot of cases, but as well to be able to afford health care for themselves. She can talk a little bit
about that.
Yeah, our hospital offers health insurance through the hospital. I make $14.50 an hour. There's no way I have enough money to be able to afford health insurance. Although they pay 70%, with that 70%, I have coworkers still paying $200-$300 an hour. I make enough where I can get government assistance. I have Medicare. I don't even have like Blue Cross Blue Shield or PPOs or HMOs where I could choose where I want to go. I just have to go to the nearest doctor that will take the insurance that I have. And that's not many now in the city of Chicago. A lot of organizations are becoming for profit and taking more private insurance than public aid.
So let me make sure I'm understanding you correctly. So you make $14.50 an hour, and you pay 30% of your insurance bill every month, comes out of your check, or every 2 weeks, or wherever that you get it. That still does not cover your basic health needs.
No, it still does not cover at all. Right, so now we're actually in bargaining, so we're trying to get our hospital to give us 100% coverage for our health care. We'll see how that goes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh the way you said it. We'll see how that goes. I could just see I've sat in negotiations.
And I know
the other side looks at you like, yeah, right.
Right.
But it's got to be one or the other, IKEA. They're paying you $14.50 an hour. So I was like, all right, look. If you insist on making me pay the 30% of the health care, all right, $30 an hour. How about that? How about me as a negotiator?
That would be amazing if I could make $30 an hour, especially with all of the positions that I fill for one person.
Right.
You know.
Now, excuse my ignorance on this, but it's a hospital. They got plenty of doctors. Like, why don't they just give you 100%? I don't understand it. It's like saying you work at a grocery store, but you can't eat any of the yogurt.
That's right.
You know what I mean? There's tons of yogurt over there.
That's right.
What am I missing here, IKEA?
Well, the biggest thing they say they don't have money. They don't have enough money to help the workers. They don't have enough money to give us raises. They don't have enough money to help us with our insurance. But you have enough money to try to build another building across the street or to do renovations in a hospital. Like now we're working on a patient processing area, which I kind of feel is a little bit of a waste of, well, money can be distributed in a better way, I would say, instead of spending $1 million on making a room for a patient where we don't have enough nurses or techs to even staff. Instead of giving the nurses bonus pay or giving myself a medical assistant bonus pay or a CNA, someone else to help them, or even bringing in temps, giving us a raise. I would definitely love a raise. It'd make it a little easier to get up in the morning to come deal with this workload, knowing that I would be at least somewhat compensated outside of the love for working for my patients. But it's tough, like living by myself, it's hard to pay my rent, my utilities, get back and forth to work, pay for insurance, and still have money to live with.
How many hours a week do you work?
Normally, technically it's supposed to be 80 hours. I work maybe about 140 something hours every pay period.
That's all overtime. Do they pay you extra for the overtime?
Depends on the pay period. So one pay period, which is a few days longer, you might get it after 100 hours. And then one pay period, you might not, and you just get straight pay across the board.
How is that? I mean, if you
want. That's why they're in negotiations right now.
That doesn't make any sense at all. But then I got to read the specifics of the language of the contract. Yeah. They're getting away with something that the contract allows them to get away with. You either get overtime or you don't get overtime.
Right.
This, in my humble opinion, IKEA, is why the insanity of our healthcare system is sort of illustrates it. Follow me where I'm going. You guys work in a hospital.
Yeah.
It's like. Like I said, there's tons of health care at the hospital.
That's
so,
right.
You know, and so much money. This is the one thing that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren agree with. So much money is spent on health care in our country. And so here are the people literally on the front line. You're the one that greets somebody when they come to the emergency room. I just was in the emergency room. I won't go into it, but. It was your equivalent at this hospital. And this person had to answer questions because there was no doctor around. Mm-hmm. So we were asking your equivalent at this hospital, like, what do you think of that? Da, 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 da. Right. And they get all that nerve. I'm sure they train you. Like, don't tell them anything because then they'll hold us accountable. Mm-hmm. But out of compassion,
sure.
The woman that was telling us information, and you know what? A lot of, like 90% of it came true. This is a woman who probably had no medical school training. Do you follow what I'm saying? But there's $1,450. It's just ridiculous.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's absolute. And so that, you know, now that speaks to the women and others that will be out there on Saturday. So many of them don't have this as an issue in their lives. So many of them don't even, they're not even aware that there are IKEAs out here who are doing this work every day to help take care of patients and people. One, because, and she said it herself, because she cares. But secondly, because she needs to have a job to take care of herself. I mean, what do we teach our young people about this society that we is supposed to be just? You go to school, you get out, you work so you can earn a decent wage so you can take care of yourself and be a responsible citizen. How are you going to do that off of $14.50 an hour? So we want people on Saturday to know about the IKEAs of the world, that they're out here. And if you want to do anything, women in the city, to help make change and make a difference, come and stand behind and stand with them to demand that they have a better opportunity for not only their workplace, but their work life as well.
Well, I hope the Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren factions in Handshake Gate, we were talking about this IKEA, the feud that erupted last night between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. I hope they're listening because there are issues that are greater than whether Bernie insulted Elizabeth or Elizabeth insulted Bernie. You got to put that pettiness aside because there are greater issues than your pet peeves. I know it's easy for me to say I was not the one insulted, etc. and so forth, IKEA. But I do believe there are greater issues that this country is facing than whether Bernie insulted Elizabeth or Elizabeth insulted Bernie.
That's right. And that is what the people care about. Mm-hmm. So they need to, if I would say anything to any of them, is you need to listen, you need to pay attention to what everyday people are saying out here and what everyday people need you to do to help fix this country of ours, right? Mm-hmm. And not just lip service. We need you to listen, pay attention, and really commit to making a change.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Thank you very much, Jackie and IKEA. Thank you for coming on
thank
the show.
You, thank you, Ben. We appreciate you having us.
And we'll bring you back. I'm sure this campaign, when do you hope to cut the deal on this?
Well, we just started, so we have a long fight ahead of us. So I'm hoping within the next couple of months or so, hopefully we don't have to strike.
I hope so, too. And I'm going to
tell you. But you know we will.
Jackie's. Oh, you threw down the threat. I'm just going to tell you, get used to this word. No. N-O. You're going to hear a lot of no. Oh, no. What are you kidding me? No. I've been on the. I've been in negotiations for a while. All right, I want to thank IKEA Johnson, Jackie Algy. I want to thank Samina Mustafa. It's been a busy day. Monroe Anderson, Miles Porter, and of course, the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois. And as IKEA Johnson can tell you, back home in Alton, they call him White Lightning. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash, Dr. D. See you tomorrow, everybody.
No one calls me that. All right, and remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and Benny J bonus interviews at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else you download your favorite podcast. Downloaders, you know we live stream this program. It's true. Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 until 3 p.m. Central Time at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and the Chicago Sun-Times YouTube channel. Join us, and if you're brave, join the YouTube live stream chat. Who knows what you'll find on that one? We'll see you tomorrow.